if you look at, if you are paying close attention, and you detailed public health folks are always paying attention to the fine line, I changed one word in our title, which has a lot to do with having done some additional analysis after we did the preliminary. The word beyond was in the abstract, and we have now changed it before. Because when we really started to look at what the listening sessions told us, it is before we see broken bones and knocked out teeth at the schools, we see a whole bunch of other stuff that looks like violence, but we didn't know a name for it because that's not what we get paid to do. And so if you could give us some pointers on how to think differently about what we're seeing that is leading to violence, that would be awesome. That would be great to help us, to help our students. And so I slightly changed it because it has so much of a different meaning in terms of how we start to prepare schools for intervening at the school level and seeing teachers and other staff at the schools as innocent, as bystanders willing to intervene. All right, so I do have a disclosure. We were funded to do this work by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We were one of four contractors. And the ideas that we put forth do not necessarily represent those of our, not even of the other subcontracting teams. I have to say that as well. We all equally own the data, and we're all looking at it from slightly different perspectives. So these are my co-presenters who are not here today. They are over at our booth. And I don't know if you had a chance to come through the exhibits, but we were an award-winning booth. We won first place for our exhibit, so we're very proud of that, being a small women-owned business. So the purpose of this presentation is to really show you how we took this idea of collecting data rapidly within a conference so that we could be a part of the policy and program development, program discussions. And I'll talk more about that. And what we started to do is to say, you know, what if we put these steps in sequence and see if they're replicable for other organizations to take a look at how do they take advantage of all of that expertise, all those subject matter experts in the room or in the conference at the same time, to really see that as a place for gathering information in general. But it really, really worked for this particular topic, and I'll tell you why when I get to that particular point. And then to talk about some of the early findings that we were able to get. All right, so in 2012, the Obama administration did something that was unprecedented. They actually took the HIV-AIDS epidemic, and they said, we've got HIV-AIDS here and violence here, and I want to put a work group together that explores the intersection of these two issues. And I was part of the team that brought the top HIV-AIDS and top violence gurus from Washington to Atlanta to the CDC conference. And after that meeting, to make a long story short so I can get to the findings, one of the things that came out of that was the government challenged all of the different federal agencies to take a look at what do we know about the intersection from the work that you do. And OWH was ashamed that they had done all of their work in HIV-AIDS here, all their work in violence here. So they hired four contracting teams to come together to take advantage of this opportunity that was happening in Savannah, Georgia, where they sent us down to talk to conference attendees. So in terms of putting together that methodology, we first sat down and said, what are we really trying to do? What could we do in this setting that we could give back to that committee that was appointed by the Obama administration that would look like something that would be contributing to the programs and policies that were going to be coming down to the front line in the next 3 years? So we looked at attitudes and beliefs. We looked at current practices and policies in schools. We looked at those factors of risk that were related to HIV. And that were impacting youth development and academic achievement. In other words, we looked at this from the standpoint of what intuitively would the school system be willing to address because it's interfering with the goals that they have. Not just one more thing to do, but you can't do youth development and you can't adequately do academic achievement if violence is going on in your school between intimate partners. So we tried to come up with a strategic standpoint from looking at it from the school system's perspective. And then we wanted to know, well, what prevention programs and intervention services are already in your schools that might be working that we could perhaps use those to enhance what you're already doing? And what opportunities are there for integrating young people into this discussion? So in terms of that big piece, I'm only slicing off the piece that looked like what we, when we were inside the conference, so that we can just have that conversation here. And then after that, we've done the policy recommendations, and we've done the peer review journal. So the point of all of this is, the thesis is, in taking advantage of that one day, no, actually it was over 3 days, a three-day conference, we were able to inform policy in ways that's going to live for about 3 to 4 years in terms of the results. And it doesn't help that, and it also helps that we got some peer review journal articles in the works from that work. And of course, not this one yet, because I held this one because it was accepted for this. But again, the four contractors are all working in the same data set. So I think, you know, there's a lot to say about the data management and analysis, but I want to say this in terms of what is replicable and what really caused the most project management systems to come together in terms of the data being credible. You know, you don't just want to come together and say, oh, we just had these discussions, but what is it that about this process that we were able to bring rigor to it so that when we packed it up and when we turned it over to those who would be using the data, they would say, you know what, it was fast-paced, but I see all the steps that would have been taken in a longer-term project. And so we had IRB approval, and in that setting, we had two primary recorders going on at each end of the room. We did confirmation calls at the beginning of every morning to make sure that every setting had the full 10 to 12 participants. And if that wasn't enough, we had our transcribers on the other end waiting on us to finish. So as soon as the session was over, we had one person responsible for uploading those recordings, and they were being transcribed while we were still at the conference, so that we could do top-line presentations at the closing session. So it was fast-paced, but you know, and it took a lot of coordination, but we got that done. And the whole purpose was, if we don't move fast enough in this field, we're going to be left out of policy and program decisions, right? All righty. So in that setting, we talked to 180 individuals, and of that, 117, or 65%, were youth professionals. Now, I will say that we took advantage of being in Savannah, and we went a little bit outside to make sure that we had some diversity within those perspectives. And in addition to talking to youth-serving organizations, we were able to partner with the 100 Black Men of Savannah, as well as Savannah State, to bring in some students for those for focus groups as well, all in that same setting. We're talking about 3 days. I still am traumatized by no sleep because our agency was the lead of the four, yeah. And so what I was checking for in terms of recruitment was, you know, making sure we had diversity from a gender perspective. Yeah. So we had 67% female and 33% males, and which is about right for when you generalize to the population of who does this work at the schools at the school level. And then we had the collegiate students. We had 36 collegiate students. 21 were female and 15 were male. So we got those perspectives relatively balanced. We had 13 high school females and 14 high school males. So the gender balance is in here, and the race and ethnic balance. Again, this one's not so balanced, but when we looked at who was at the conference, we were able to say that we got we matched with what the participants who were at the conference. And in age, we got the diverse ranges, obviously from bringing in the student views at those different levels. So, and then participants by education, we were able to get a cross-section of that, and a very good representation of people employed in different ways at the school, which was very important. This is the one that was the most important, because when we're talking about people seeing things, we didn't just want to talk to teachers. We wanted to talk to folks who saw students all throughout the day. And I would say if we had an opportunity, we would also want to talk to the people who do the lunchrooms and the janitors, because they have a lot to say about this as well. So this just goes on about those methodologies. And so from that, we were able to get our what we call thematic findings, conceptualizing what IP intimate partner violence looks like in the school setting, looking at the current state of intimate partner violence programs at the school level and related organizations serving young people, meaning there were some things that were going on in after-school programs, and since they were so close in proximity to the schools, some of the youth development individuals were able to speak about those programs. Then we also talked about another theme that emerged were the barriers to school-based. Like, what is it, if this is such a good thing to do, you're right there on it like a laser, you're seeing these things, what is it that is keeping you from being the ideal place to put a stop to this at, as you see it emerging? And then cross-cutting themes. And this is the only, number four is the only place where I'll bring in some of those ideas that look that everybody, no matter if we talk to the youth, the collegiate youth, the collegiate women and men, or the young people in high school, or the youth serving professionals, they all had those things to say. They had those things in common. And then finally, we sat down and we started to say, okay, what are the recommendations that we as professionals, having listened to all these groups, what are we going to send back to Washington in terms of next steps? And then discussions and implications, we're still in the thick of that. Okay, so this is what they're saying. When I think of violence, I think beyond the broken bones and the knocked out teeth. What I'm seeing is, and this is what they started to say, yeah, I'm seeing this excessive control and domination in the school setting. Like, I'm not seeing people getting beat down, but I'm seeing all of these conversations about possession, who is mine, you know, lots of jealousy, lots of manipulation, excessive checking of partners' emails and cell phones, sending angry and controlling text messages, and people are reading them out loud. So I'm hearing all these things. A breach of sexual intimate secrets and confidentiality on social media. And then the other factors that were contributing. So this is what they're seeing in the school on a day-to-day basis. I forgot to mention this part. They said that they are baffled by the level of dangerous sexual relationships among middle school and high school students. Like middle school, the level of conversation that is hypersexual, that they wouldn't even think that middle school students even knew the language to have these conversations. But one person, I'm not bringing this into this conversation, but on the HIV side, they said the paradox is they talk slang in terms of sex and sexuality all day long, but if you bring them into a program and try to get them to have those same conversations using the proper terminology, they shut down. So there's got to be something that's, you know, so they know all of this stuff, but they don't want to have age-appropriate conversations. They're actually talking as if they are, you know, 20, 21 years old when you hear some of the things that they said. Factors viewed as contributing to intimate partner violence. So this is what they're saying, that these students are coming from negative home environments, lack of education about the core elements of what a healthy relationship looks like. So in other words, they said from their perspective, when they see the jealousy and the manipulation and the possession, that looks like he loves me. So as long as he's not hitting me, it looks like he cares. And when you don't know any different, then you can't start to explain to them that that's not what love looks like. Lack of peer support in assertively addressing the onset of excessive controlling behaviors. Like there's nobody to say, don't let him do that to you. Substance use, with many girls being introduced to controlled substances by a significant other. So these are the things that they're saying. They're already bringing this into the school environment. So we ask them, well, what's going on in your school? These are the things that you're saying. Now, how are you addressing it? And they said, we have a lot of one-shot programs. You know, and of course, during Domestic Violence Prevention Month and Intimate Partner Violence, they get these one-shot opportunities. But they said these assemblies are extremely powerful. But the problem is there's very little to follow up. And we don't really know how effective they are in terms of changing knowledge, attitudes, behaviors, and skills amongst the participants because they're one shot. But what they said is intuitively, we know that for the next 72 hours, people are talking about this. But they're talking about it to their peers and not necessarily to trained professionals. And I'll just give you what else is packed in my slides because I have the two-minute warning, and if there's, to be fair to the other participants, if you want me to expound upon these in the question and answer, I'll come back to these. These are the barriers. Teacher barriers came up, student-centered barriers, parental barriers, programmatic approach barriers, and system, school system-wide barriers came up as to why it's going to be difficult for them to change the way in which they address intimate partner violence at the school. And they just gave me more pointers on that. And then these are those five cross-cutting themes amongst all the diverse folks we talked to The recommendations are there, and we went piece by piece. For every problem they gave us in terms of a barrier, we as consultants sat down and tried to come up with a solution that was grounded in the work that they did. So we didn't want to go back to Washington and say, they got barriers but no strategies and solutions. And then these are those continued discussions that we're having to make sure that Office on Women's Health is a part of that federal policy change that is going to be taking place. So never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. In other words, there were only 7 of us, I forgot to mention that did this work over a 3-day period. Thank you very much.